All right, that will not be recorded. When a couple comes to me and wants to get married, we set aside a time to talk about the worship service. And at this planning session, I tell them that I guarantee that something will go wrong at their wedding. Usually it's something small, like they will receive the wrong color flowers, or somebody will decide to wear white to the wedding besides the bride. And true to my experience, something usually goes wrong. Usually something simple, but I have heard stories of ministers not showing up, glass vases cracking in the middle of service. That's why I've been told you ban, if you have a candle, there's this beautiful image. You put a candle on marbles and a glass vase, right? What happens is that candle will heat up those little glass balls, and then all that heat transfer shatters it. So it happened to a pastor friend of mine that he was told about this experience. Dance floors don't arrive to the reception. Stories that I tend not to share with brides and grooms. But for those getting married, at the end of the service, no matter what happens, they will usually be married. And whatever happens at the wedding will become a story to remember. And in our gospel story, something has gone wrong. The wedding is running out of wine, and if the wedding is running out of wine, the couple, particularly the groom, will be embarrassed. This wedding will be remembered as the wedding in which, do you remember that really good wedding that ran out of wine? Which ironically is one of the reasons we remember it today. Because when the wedding ran out of wine, Jesus turned water and a large stone jugs into wine. But for most that were gathered there that day, they were left unaware. They just got to taste that amazing wine. So when Jesus turns the water into wine, Jesus not only provides, but he actually ends up saving the honor of the wedding party, even if they don't recognize it. How surprising it is to think that Jesus' first major miracle in the book of John happens in the midst of people too drunk to notice. At a time when people are not even focused on him, they've come to celebrate the marriage between two people. At a place where only the servants, the disciples, and his mother see what has happened. In fact, the chief steward compliments the groom on saving the best wine for last. Another reminder that not even the one who's in charge of the wine itself knew where it came from. This miracle in some ways does not seem that special. No one is healed, the hungry are not fed, and the dead are still dead. Instead, Jesus only makes more wine for a bunch of people who are already drunk, so that someone else's honor is maintained. But this miracle is a sign. And signs are important in the Gospel of John because a sign in the Gospel of John is a revelation about Christ and what he is bringing into the world. So when we hear the word sign, it becomes a word that's meant to trigger us to look deeper, to draw us into the text and ask, what is this story really talking to us about? And in the Bible, there are many times where wine is used as an image for God's salvation. For example, in Isaiah 25, salvation is presented as a feast on top of a mountain with choice meat and with well-aged wine. And of course, wine is one of the things that Jesus used at the Lord's Supper. It's the same reason why we use it today. That cup is the new covenant in his blood, shed for you and for all people for the forgiveness of sin. Wine is a symbol of salvation in the Bible. And marriage is often used to describe the relationship between God and God's people. Both examples of joy, like our Old Testament reading, but also passages that struggle with the relationship is still that. If you want an example of that, you come back next week for our Sunday morning Bible study. They're studying Hosea. And in Hosea, Hosea prophesizes that God's relationship is like, or Hosea prophesizes that God's relationship with Israel is like Hosea's relationship with his wife Gomer. Gomer is cheating on Hosea. Yeah, not the best image in the Bible for marriage, right? But it's this really interesting way. So when we hear these things like marriage and wine, it's calling to this image of salvation and relationship with God. So when we dig deeper into our text, I believe our text is telling us something really neat. That the life that we have been promised by God through Christ, that salvation, that's better than all previous wines, is better than anything before it. That Christ is going to usher in a new age, an age of hope, an age that is better. That this gift will be given to us through Christ's work, which comes through the cleansing jars. Jars that can represent baptism and the Jewish tradition. A reminder of what Christ does for us on the cross and in baptism, and that Christ's fulfillment of the promise made to Abraham. Ultimately, when I hear the changing of water into wine, I think of it as a miracle of hope. It shows that Christ is the one chosen by God to bring us hope. That even if the world cannot see what is happening, even if most people are unable to see God's action in the world, those actions still exist, and all people are blessed by those actions. As it says in Matthew 5:45, "For God causes the sun to rise on the evil and the good, sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous." A reminder that even those who do not see, even those who are opposed, are still ironically blessed by God. That God still provides blessings. And I think one of our callings as disciples is a reminder to look for God in the world. To open our eyes up, to see those moments of where we see hope in a world that doesn't always feel that way. Look for the moments when God is at work in our world, particularly since it's so easy to miss it. This past week, I was at Burger King getting my morning coffee before coming to work, and I was third in line. At the very front were two kids, a middle-aged man, and then me. And the kids had ordered their breakfast for the day. And they had bought all the things, and they were figuring out how much they had spent, and they got their answer back. They pull out their $5 bill, and then the cashier says, "It's $5.39." You know, so they're 39 cents short. And of course, you know, I should give myself the compliment, I did grab my wallet. But the gentleman in front of me, I could watch this happening. As these kids are struggling to find those 39 cents, he's already in his pockets looking for change. Eventually, he decides that he has a 20. So as these kids are kind of trying to figure out what to do, the person behind the cashier is kind of looking at them strange. The gentleman with the 20 steps forward and says, "This is for them." He pays off the 39 cents of change. And the kids look and they turn back to him and they say, "Thank you." And his response to them is, "Pay it forward." You know, if you see somebody in need, help them. And in some ways, it's kind of an interesting example because you think about 39 cents. 39 cents is nothing. You know, I put 39 cents on my counter when I go home. You know, it stays there for months, don't even think about it. It's not a huge amount. But when we talk about those kids who are going to have breakfast that morning, and the option between them being able to have breakfast and not is 39 cents, And this gentleman who's carrying a 20, which is a huge abundance to 39 cents, says, I'm going to use my abundance to pay off your debt. I see the love of God in that. Whether he sees it, whether the kids see it, how much that reminds me of the story of God. That as we are in need, God gives to us an abundantly. That as we do not have the ability to save ourselves, we do not have it, that we could live in shame, God comes and says, no, I'll cover abundantly for it. That God's grace abounds. That God's gift of love comes to those who may see what is happening, see God at work, but it also comes to those who are just unable to see it. Whether they are just unaware or, for lack of a better term, drunk. They don't see it. But that doesn't mean that God doesn't care, and that doesn't mean that God doesn't help. There's a great quote by Gandhi. Gandhi's quote is, be the change that you wish that you see in the world. Which is a really neat idea. So if you say, I want to see a better world, I help be that change. And it's hard in Christianity because when we talk about change, we know change starts with God. That God is going to do the things that we can accomplish. But our faith life is this. We're called to do something really interesting. We're called to first see it. To celebrate. Celebrate those things. You know, celebrate that we know that there are ministries in our world that make our world better. And then we're invited to help, knowing that by ourselves, we can't do it all. But together through God, we can change this world. And change this world not for the worse, but change this world for the better. And we do that because God has come to us. God has invited us to a feast of hope and salvation. Hope and salvation that is better than anything else we have. So no matter how bad today is, or how bad yesterday was, or tomorrow is going to be, we know that one day we will enter a kingdom that is better than anything else. And we receive that kingdom not because of our abilities, not because we have provided. It's because God has provided on the cross. That God says, I will invite you to this feast. Not that I will invite you. I have invited you to this feast because I love you. And that love is what defines us. Amen. Amen.